Welcome to the SearchHealthIT.com podcast, where SearchHealthIT.com editors interview leading experts on IT strategies for healthcare leaders.
Hello and welcome to our latest podcast presentation. I am Craig Beyer, assistant editor for SearchHealthIT.com, and today I'm speaking with Jeff Berwick, senior technical project manager at CareTech Solutions. Jeff is responsible for the project management of CareTech Solutions' client hospitals' IT infrastructure and recovery services, as well as a number of other IT initiatives. Today's discussion will focus on best practices for surviving a disaster and disaster recovery as a whole in the health IT space. Jeff, thank you for joining me here today on this podcast.
Oh, you're certainly welcome, Craig.
So I understand that you are responsible for the management and participation of multiple audit activities and also heavily involved with HIPAA. So could you delve into how organizations satisfy HIPAA requirements in the face of a disaster? Or in other words, what IT staffs need to do to please HIPAA?
Let's first of all talk a little bit about HIPAA, Greg. The HIPAA rules that we're concerned about cover data availability and integrity, which could be impacted by a disaster. And the HIPAA rules are organized around standards and corresponding implementation specifications that are necessary to meet the standard. The HIPAA standards and implementation specifications are published and readily available online. A major source of technical input into HIPAA comes from the National Institute for Standards and Technology, which really differentiates what HIPAA's all about and how they are able to rely on pretty technically competent folks to help in their guidance. Now, the standard we're interested in relation to DR is referred to the contingency plan. So some words from the contingency plan that's part of the HIPAA guidelines include the text: establish and implement as needed policies and procedures for responding to an emergency that impact the availability of electronic health information. So one of the important points there, some emphasis on, is on that as needed. And the good news is the policymakers appear to understand that one size doesn't necessarily fit all. So the organizations have some flexibility in terms of some of their decisions pertaining to planning for DR. Now, the implementation specifications that support meeting the standards are classified as either required or addressable. And addressable items, they must be included in your plan, in your policies and procedures, but they're based on specific circumstances and a documented rationale, and a covered entity may have varying degrees of detail in the contingency plan for those addressable items. So let's take a look at what's required. There's three items that are required. One is a data backup plan, which you're expected to establish and implement procedures to create and maintain retrievable exact copies of electronic protected health information. The second item that's required is you must have a disaster recovery plan, which establishes procedures to restore any loss of data. And the third item is you must have an emergency mode operation plan, which is all about your ability to continue to protect and secure the data while operating in emergency mode. So if your locks got blown off the doors, you better have a guard there to make sure somebody doesn't get into your data center and gets access to your data. The two addressable items are your testing and revision procedures, which are where you're implementing procedures for periodic testing and the revision of contingency plans. That's addressable, and I suppose that maybe a popular reason why an organization may not be able to come up with a testing plan in all areas is they may just not be able to afford to do it, because typically testing requires some significant expenditure, and because of that, I believe HIPAA has put that in an addressable area. And the other area of the addressable items is the applications and data criticality analysis, where you assess the relative criticality of your specific applications and data in support of other contingency plan components. Now that's addressable, and I'm not really, you know, there's really no information that explains why they chose to make that one addressable, but it probably has to do again with the organization's ability to maybe manage and control some of those items, particularly organizations that may outsource some of those their applications to a third party, and they're relying on that third party to deal with their the recovery activities. So just kind of getting down here toward the end of some HIPAA discussion, important thing to keep in mind, too, is the HIPAA rules are not prescriptive. They don't provide exact action. So, you know, you talk about what we have to do to stay out of trouble if we get exposed to a HIPAA audit. I think it's they would expect that all these implementation specifications are documented and the specific entities' written policy and procedures are reasonable and verifiable. And I think if those things are done, the covered entities can be well along their way to meeting the HIPAA requirements. And incidentally, I'm not aware of any HIPAA exams. I suspect, like I mentioned earlier, they will rely heavily on the National Institute for Standards and Technology for guidance on those examinations. And just a couple other comments, too. Some of the other organizations we hear about are FEMA, and they make mention of disaster recovery, but not a lot of detail. Another organization we run into is the Joint Commission, and they look at DR, and they expect to see plans and some evidence of testing. It's interesting, though, the Joint Commission, being a private organization, doesn't publish anything that's similar to what HIPAA does. So we're really in a better position with HIPAA to be a little bit more proactive in terms of expecting what might happen in an audit. As we know, that the Joint Commission, when they conduct their audit, they include the DR for the entity, and CareTech, being a major supplier to a number of the hospitals and other health organizations, is occasionally asked by our customers to support them in terms of providing what we do for the systems we supply to them from a DR perspective.
Could you speak to a disaster example, from the past, and kind of shed some light on how a protocol went, and if you either agree or disagree with how that protocol was handled in terms of disaster recovery reaction?
Yeah, fortunately, we don't have a lot of examples to point to. Personally, I've never been involved in a disaster, a real disaster, but I know the one, you know, when you do a little research and you talk to folks about it, they'll mention the one that took place in May of 2011 in Joplin, Missouri. And the interesting thing about that is that that hospital had made the decision to leverage a third-party provider similar to CareTech for their EMR systems. And so when their hospital got blown away, their data center didn't. In fact, their data center was far enough away that it was not impacted by the tornado. So I guess the point there is that if you're really looking for a reliable, continuously available solution, you probably have to have some geographic separation that's substantial enough to avoid Mother Nature's wrath. It's interesting, too, if you look further into that example, they were able to move a number of their patients to another nearby hospital in the community that also escaped the damage from the tornado. And as it turned out, coincidentally, that hospital was also using that same third-party vendor to provide their EMR systems. And so with a small configuration change, they were able to permit the displaced folks and the folks at the neighboring hospital to get access to all the medical records for those patients that had to get relocated to that surviving hospital. So I guess this is kind of, this is a worst-case disaster. I mean, it just obliterated the institution. It picked cars up and school buses and slammed them into exterior generators and other systems that had just really rendered the place useless. But I guess on the other side, the ability to recover was probably the best-case scenario, where they were using a third-party vendor that gave them that insulation from an event that happened right on their own location. So I guess the good news there, too, is that the fewer things you have to worry about in the event of a disaster, the more effective you're going to be in getting your operation going again. So in this case, they needed to worry about giving their users access to terminals and printers and so forth, but that was a heck of a lot easier to know that once they could get internet connectivity, they had complete access immediately to all their systems.
And we could shift gears a little bit. My third question is how healthcare leaders or organizations, how they go about aligning their disaster recovery plan with their business continuity plan. Do you have any tips for how that strategy should be formed?
Yeah, from experience, I've seen a lot of plans that have struggled because they don't have the chief executive from that institution mandating that plan will be put together, and they will provide the resources, including the people and the dollars, and that they also insist on accountability for that plan. So I think it's really, it's like in many scenarios, we always talk about you got to get leadership buy-in. Well, this is certainly the case in a DR plan. You've got to get that support from the top, number one. And when we talk about business continuity, I like to think of DR as just being a component of business continuity. It's just one element. It's a very obvious, DR is a very, for technology, various obvious components. A lot of people have trouble differentiating what's DR and what's BCP, but I think for our discussion, I think we all agree that DR is a component of the BCP. It's certainly when you're putting that business continuity plan together, the IT team should be a key part of that executive level team, the CIO or whatever form of leadership the IT organization has. And I think that most people will admit that the IT team brings something really substantial to the executive level of business continuity planning because of IT's tendency to be very disciplined and structured and detail-oriented. And they really make a good partner in the business continuity planning, typically strong project management skills and so forth. So that's an important element in being successful. And speaking of project management, I think that any BCP and associated DR should be, when you get it started, it should be associated or should be approached just like a major project where you start with a charter and a scope statement, you identify those stakeholders, and you develop the detailed requirements, and you get sign-offs on what it is you're attempting to do, and also you identify your success criteria as well. So how are you going to measure whether or not you really achieved what you set out to do? And certainly the DR plan should cover applications that deal with the users, like payroll and expense reimbursement and other operating requirements such as their network access and their workstations, laptops, and printers and fax capabilities and so forth. So in other words, it's just not the data centers. It's the stuff that's out there that the users depend on to not only continue to live their lives and pay their bills and so forth, but to actually get convenient access to the systems that they need to do their work. And I think another important element in developing a BCP and a DR plan is to, when you look at strategies, you should consider alternatives. And it's the same in many, many instances, that we shouldn't just follow right into one decision and one method. We should look at, well, what are our options available to us, such as what level should third parties play in our recovery activities, and should we, what level of investment should we engage in terms of creating the best level of fault tolerance and high availability and on and on. So, and I think when you look at those options, then you can kind of develop a cost benefit analysis, and I believe that having going through that exercise gives all the external parties confidence that the organization has done their due diligence in terms of coming up with a strategy that's really appropriate for that organization.
Yeah, you kind of hit on my final question when you answered the last one, but I was curious, in your view, How do you know a good disaster recovery plan when you see one? Is there any features that are essential and kind of stick out?
Well, I'd say believability is, you know, that sounds trite, but I think that's really true. Because when you dig into the plan, you should look for a complete inventory of everything that's being considered in terms of applications and the supporting infrastructure. And look for some kind of mechanism that the organization is using to verify that and to validate it and audit that. I think we talked before about the criticality analysis. I think that's key. Because regardless of how good your setup is, you can't get everything back online at the same moment, so you better know the order that systems should be brought back up and what the logical dependency is on various systems that might dictate what order those systems will come back up. And there should be some discussion in the document that references that the plan is a living document, and there are specific people that are being held accountable for the maintenance and the integration of that DR plan with the company's or the organization's change control. As things change, they could impact that plan, and so that I think that's an important test. The plan should focus on results from test activities, and those results, it should be called out that they should be reviewed and signed off by senior leadership periodically. And again, that gets back to that issue of accountability. The stated recovery time objectives for each application and how much data can be tolerated in a loss situation, that's important for all the critical applications. And as I kind of mentioned about the believability, there should be a rational technical recovery strategy. In other words, something that is viable and that will work, and that the testing validates the decisions that are made in terms of that strategy. You better find in a decent plan a good testing methodology with a well-defined test and results and the frequency established. And then I think pretty much everybody would expect to see the elements of the business continuity plan included in the disaster recovery plan, which includes how you activate that plan, who the decision makers are that pull the trigger, and what people and roles are notified, and how you coordinate the group under various scenarios in terms of facilities and meeting places and stuff along those lines. So again, it gets back to that whole point of being believable. So I guess, there's one more thing. I think we've pretty much covered your questions. I just wanted to say that I'm looking forward to continuous improvement, evolution in disaster recovery. And I think that we're all starting to realize that old disaster recovery models where you relied on magnetic tape and cold sites and so forth, and even high availability type solutions, is not going to cut it anymore, because people, every day there's new applications and new and greater dependency on these systems in the hospital environment. So we're to the point that the only acceptable answer is continuous availability. In other words, the ideal scenario down the road is going to be organizations will split up their processing across multiple data centers, whether they own them or they use a company like CareTech to support that strategy. And those multiple data centers will share the load all the time, and they have the excess capacity, so if any one of the nodes drops out because of a disaster, everything keeps on ticking and the users don't miss a beat. So, you know, let's stay tuned and keep our fingers crossed that the dollars are going to be available and the enthusiasm and excitement is going to be there to make that kind of world happen for us.
Well, thank you for adding that, Jeff. And I'm sure this will provide great insight to our listeners on searchhealthit.com. And I do appreciate you joining me here today.
Well, I you're certainly welcome, and it's been my pleasure.
Thank you for listening to this SearchHealthIT.com podcast. For more information and resources about healthcare technology and electronic health records, please visit SearchHealthIT.com. Thank you.